28 mines on the list. 28 imperial takeovers dating back to a year before Ranking had ripped price mining out of Arinda's hands. The majority of them, though, 21 to be precise, had occurred during the past year. She dug through the list, scanning the basic elements, occasionally digging into or at least skimming the accompanying subfiles, looking for common threads. She reached the entry on the most recent event, an attack on an Imperial task force off Umbara. She paused, frowning, as one of the names in the report caught her eye. Captain Thrawn. No, she murmured under her breath. Surely it couldn't be the same blue-skinned non-human she'd met at the Alessandra Hotel a year ago. That Thrawn had been a lieutenant, and this one was a captain. And she'd heard somewhere that it typically took 10 to 15 years in the Navy to ladder that far up the ranks. But it was him, all right. There was a subfile attached, giving the details of the battle, and the accompanying images left no doubt. The lowly lieutenant that Colonel Ularin had been trying to rescue had leapt to command rank in less than 2 years. Mentally, she shook her head. Either he was amazingly competent, or he had impressively powerful friends. Interesting. But not her concern. Putting him out of her mind, she got back to work. Focused on her analysis, she didn't notice the time slipping away. And it was a shock when she looked at the chrono and realized the sun had been down for over half an hour. The rowdies would be starting to gather. But the trip back to her apartment should still be safe, if she hurried. She closed down the computer system and headed out, locking the door behind her. The faint daylight from overhead had long since vanished, but the increased intensity from the street lamps and brassy advertising signs more than made up for it. Still, the lack of sun somehow created a psychological illusion of darkness. Up here, where the police were vigilant, things were all right. But in the lower parts of the district, the rowdies would be gathering to drink, spice up, and make noise. Some of them, eventually, would also start making trouble. The turbolift car, when it arrived, was packed. The next car might be more comfortable, but Arinda wasn't in the mood to wait. Fortunately, the passengers began filing out almost immediately as the car stopped at the more elite residence levels, just below the government offices. 20 levels above hers, her last companion got out, leaving her alone. Not an ideal situation. Certainly not at this hour and this deep. But she should be all right. And as long as she had the car to herself, she might as well take advantage of the unexpected privacy. Pulling out her comm, she keyed for Juahir.
Hey!
Juahir answered cheerfully.
What's up? You got dinner going?
Not exactly, Arinda said. I got tied up at the office and I'm just heading home now.
Oh,
Juahir said, her voice going serious.
You okay? Where are you?
In the turbo lift heading down,
Arinda said, watching the indicator.
I'm almost... She broke off, her breath catching in her throat.
The car had reached her level, but instead of stopping, it continued moving down.
Juahir, it didn't stop,
Arinda said, fighting to keep her voice even. Belatedly, she lunged for the control board and punched the next button down.
Too late.
The car had already passed that level. She tried again, picking a button 10 levels farther down this time. Again, the car reached the landing and continued on without stopping.
Arinda? Arinda?
It's not stopping,
Arinda ground out. This time, she ran her finger down the whole column of buttons. The car ignored all of them, and it was picking up speed.
Juahir, I can't stop it, she said. It's heading down and I can't stop it.
Okay, don't panic,
Juahir said firmly.
There's an emergency stop button. You see it?
Yes,
Arinda said, It was at the very bottom of the panel, protected by a faded orange cover. After years of uneventful travel, she'd forgotten it was even there. She flipped up the cover, revealing a less faded orange button underneath, and pressed it. And grabbed for the handrail as the car screeched to a sudden halt. For a moment, all was silence.
Arinda?
Juahir called tentatively. Arinda found her voice.
I'm okay, she said. It stopped, finally.
Where are you?
Arinda peered at the indicator.
Level 4120.
Juahir whistled softly.
1,000 from the top. Okay, you took your usual turbo lift, right?
Right.
The car door slid open. Cautiously, Arinda peered outside. She'd never been this far down before, but it looked exactly the way the vids and hollows portrayed it. Garish display signs blazed everywhere, much brighter and more strident than the ones higher up, promoting shops or advertising products, or flickering with the visual static of malfunction or unpaid bills. Contrasting with the bright colors was the stolid, faded white of the street lamps, about 3/4 of them working. The rest, struggling to maintain illumination, were gone completely dark. The walkways beneath the lights, like the lights themselves, were mostly fine, but there were enough broken and missing tiles to emphasize that she was no longer in the city's upper levels. The building fronts behind the signs ran the gamut from carefully maintained and almost cheerful to struggling and faded, to dilapidated and slum-like. And everything, even the bravely painted storefronts, seemed dirty. And then there were the people. There weren't many pedestrians on the walkways right now. Most of them were traveling in groups of 3 or more, as if no one wanted or dared to be alone. And all of them were walking in the odd gait of people who wanted to hurry, but didn't want to look like they were hurrying. Like the buildings and the walkways, the people also seemed dirty.
Okay.
Juahir's voice came from the comm.
You're going to have to move. That turbolift's obviously broken, and you don't want to wait there until someone comes to fix it. There's another turbolift about 6 blocks to the west. Can you see the sign?
Arinda squinted down the walkway, but the turbolift indicator sign, if it was even theoretically visible from this angle, was completely swallowed up by the glare of the display signs.
No, but I can get there.
Okay, go,
Juahir ordered.
We're on our way. We'll try to meet you before you get there.
Arinda frowned.
We? Is Driller with you?
Just get moving. Hide your comm. It'll tag you as top class, and you don't want that. And be careful.
I will.
Keying off, Arinda tucked her comm back into her pocket. She took a final look around, then headed down the walkway, trying to match the not-hurrying pace of the others. It wasn't too bad, actually. The people were rough-edged and a little on the skittish side, and she had no doubt they were both willing and able to engage in rough stuff if the mood struck them. But back in Bash 4, she'd learned tricks of expression and body language that made people think twice before engaging with her. Luckily, the pattern here seemed to be the same as it had back there. The handful of people who got close enough to get a good look at her passed by without comment and without slowing. She'd made it 4 blocks and could finally see the turbolift indicator sign when it all fell apart. They came without warning. 6 of them. Gangly youths hopped on spice or something worse, boiling out of a pair of dark doorways between 2 broken lights. 2 of them carried long chains. The other 4 had short blades held casually in their hands.
Hey, sweets!
One of the chain carriers called.
Looking for some fun?
Arinda threw a quick look over her shoulder. 2 more thugs had emerged from concealment behind her. With a sinking feeling, she realized she was trapped. To her left were the windows and doorways of small businesses already shut for the night. To her right was a 2-meter-high railing between the walkway and a sheer drop of at least 20 levels before she even hit anything solid.
"Not interested, thanks,"
she called back, trying to keep her voice steady. She'd tussled with friends when she was growing up, and had had to deal with the occasional drunk or spicehead back on Lothal, but she'd never faced anything like this. She could call the police, but they were spread all over the district, and the thugs were right here. Trouble would reach her long before any help could. She could turn and run, and hope she could somehow get past the two men behind her. But there was nothing back there but unfamiliar walkways and a broken turbo lift.
"Aw, don't be like that,"
the thug said, mock sweetly.
"You want a drink? Sure you do. So do we. You can buy us all one. You got money, right?"
Arinda felt her stomach tighten into a knot. What the hell was she going to do? Behind the 6 thugs, a man and woman had come into view, striding toward the confrontation through the shadows of another pair of broken street lamps. Arinda watched them, feeling a surge of hope. This was her chance. If the couple got too close before they realized what was happening, she might be able to point the thugs in that direction and get away while they were occupied with more interesting prey. Too late. The man came to a stop 10 meters behind the thugs as he apparently spotted the trouble. If he and the woman turned and ran right now, they'd probably make it back to the turbo lift before the rowdies could catch them. Except that the woman hadn't stopped when her companion did. She was still walking toward the thugs as if she didn't even see them. Arinda braced herself. The thug's spokesman must have heard the approaching footsteps. He started to turn as the woman reached him. Without even pausing, the woman snapped her leg up, jabbing the edge of her foot into the back of his knee. The leg collapsed beneath him. He got one hand on the pavement, howling in rage and pain as he flailed for balance. His cursing abruptly cut off as the woman slammed the back of her fist into the side of his neck. He collapsed to the walkway and lay still. For a single second, the other thugs froze, gaping in bewilderment. The woman didn't give them time to recover from their shock. Even as her first target fell, she snatched the chain from his nerveless fingers and threw it at the heads of the 3 youths on her right. 2 of them managed to dodge. The 3rd caught the chain squarely across his throat and dropped with a tortured gurgle as the chain rattled onto the pavement beside him. The woman spun to face the 2 standing on her left, but the gang had had enough. The 4 still on their feet took off at top speed, sprinting past Arinda on either side without even a glance. Arinda spun around as they passed, saw that the 2 who'd been behind her were already tearing into the garish lights of the night.
"You all right?"
Arinda turned back, feeling her jaw drop.
"Did you hear?"
"Yeah, hi. You okay?"
Juahir gripped Arinda's shoulder, looking her up and down.
"Did they get to you?"
"No,"
Arinda managed. The man Juahir had been walking with had finally come unglued from the walkway and was walking toward them.
"I was... You surprised me."
"I said we were coming,"
Juahir reminded her, waving her companion forward.
"Arinda Price, meet Atlas Doss. Atlas is a bodyguard who's been taking some extra hand-to-hand classes at the dojo. We just finished our session and we're heading home when I got your call. He offered to come along in case I needed him."
"I guess you didn't,"
Arinda said, eyeing the man closely. He didn't look much like a bodyguard.
"Nope,"
Juahir said.
"And before you ask, he let me take them on by myself because I told him to. He's a government employee. If he beats someone down, there's a massive data work he has to fill out."
"Assuming the victims file a complaint,"
Arinda murmured.
"Well, there's that,"
Juahir conceded.
Regardless, as a private citizen, all I have to do is claim self-defense or defense of others, and I walk.
Nice when the law works on the side of the people.
You mean for a change? Otlas asked. His voice was smooth and resonant, pleasant and almost cheerful. Again, not the kind of voice Arinda would expect from a man who beat people bloody for a living.
That's not what I said, Arinda protested.
It's okay. Otlas has no illusions as to how Imperial law is stacked, Juahir said. He works for... Well, actually, he's not supposed to talk about his job or employer. Sorry.
Not a problem,
Arinda said, taking a second look. That kind of mandated silence usually implied someone very high up the political ladder lurking behind the curtain. This Otlas character might be worth cultivating.
We should get moving now, don't you think?
Absolutely, Juahir said. Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready now,
Arinda said. She took a step and found herself fighting unexpectedly for balance as one leg tried to collapse beneath her.
Whoa,
Juahir said, catching her arm.
Let me help.
Thanks,
Arinda said, her face heating with embarrassment.
I'm not scared, you know. Just shaking.
Don't worry. It happens to everyone,
Juahir said, peering closely at her. Adrenaline and delayed shock.
You ever think about taking some self-defense training?
I've thought about it a lot,
Arinda assured her as they started walking toward the turbolift.
Mostly in the past 3 minutes. How much does your dojo charge?
Unfortunately, we're totally booked at the moment, Juahir said, wrinkling her nose in thought. We might be able to refer you to...
She broke off and looked at Otlas, who'd taken up position on Arinda's other side.
What about you? Would you be willing to give Arinda an hour's training before or after your classes? We could work out a discount.
I couldn't ask you to do that,
Arinda protested.
Juahir, stop it. You're embarrassing him.
Not at all, Otlas said, inclining his head to her. I'd be delighted to give you some instruction. It's been said that a man never truly understands a subject until he teaches it.
But do you even have the time?
Arinda pressed.
Juahir said you were someone's bodyguard.
Yes, but at the moment I'm just helping guard an empty office suite, Otlas said. My employer won't be arriving for his next visit for at least 6 more weeks. More than enough time to instruct you in the basics. He smiled, almost shyly. And perhaps a bit more.
Arinda looked back at Juahir. There was an oddly innocent expression on the other woman's face. Was this maybe not just about self-defense training? And suddenly, Arinda realized she didn't care. She could really use another friend in this city. If Juahir wanted to play matchmaker, more power to her.
Okay, you've got yourself a deal, she said. Both of you,
she added, looking back and forth between them.
On one condition.
Which is?
Otlas asked.
I get to take you out to dinner tonight,
Arinda said.
Both of you.
Chapter 15.
Many of those skilled in technological warfare believe that physical training and discipline are unnecessary. With turbolasers, hyperdrives, armor plating, and the mental resources to direct them, muscular strength and agility are thought to be merely conceits. They are wrong. The mind and body are linked together in a meshwork of oxygen. Nutrients, hormones, and neuron health. Physical exercise drives that meshwork, stimulating the brain and freeing one's intellect. Simulated combat has the additional virtue of training the eye to spot small errors and exploit them. A change in focus can also allow the subconscious mind to focus on unresolved questions. Simulated combat often ends with the warrior discovering that one or more of those questions has been unexpectedly solved. And occasionally, such exercise can serve other purposes.
I do not understand, Thrawn said, his usually impassive face troubled as he gazed at the datapad report. If Thrawn were a lesser being, Eli reflected, he would almost say the Chiss was confused.
What's there to understand? Eli asked. It's the result everyone expected.
The glowing red eyes bored into Eli's.
Everyone?
Mostly, Eli hedged. Yes, that was definitely what he might characterize as confusion.
Really? It's just Navy politics as usual. But it violates all tactical reason,
Thrawn objected.
Commander Chino acquitted himself well, and the actions of his ship won the battle and saved many lives. How does High Command conclude that he must be relieved of duty?
They didn't relieve him exactly, Eli pointed out. The communication stated that he'd been permitted to retire.
Is there a difference in the result?
Not really, Eli admitted.
You're right. Letting him retire is mostly just a sweet shell.
As I say, politics.
Genling's well connected, and his delicate little pride got bruised, so he's taken it out on Chino.
Thrawn looked again at the datapad.
It is a foolish waste of resources.
Agreed, Eli said. But it could have been worse.
How so?
Really? Eli asked, frowning. Was it really not obvious to him? You were the one Genling really wanted to nail to the bulkhead. Chino might have been able to save himself if he told the panel you overreached your authority. But he didn't. Since they had nothing on you, they threw him to the wolves instead.
Thrawn was silent another 3 steps. A foolish waste, he murmured again.
Eli sighed.
You might as well get used to it.
Again, the glowing red eyes turned on him.
What do you mean?
Eli hesitated. It really wasn't his place to say this, but if he didn't, who else would? And for all Thrawn's military skill and insight, he seemed incapable of seeing this one on his own.
I mean, sir, there's a good chance that you're going to leave a trail of damaged careers in your wake.
In fact, you already have. Commander Chino, Admiral Wiskovis, Commandant Deanlark, all of them have had official feathers ruffled in their direction.
There was no such intent on my part.
I know that, Eli said. It's not because of anything you've done. It's just the political reaction to, well, to you.
That was never my intent in accepting the Emperor's service.
Intent isn't the point, Eli said patiently. The problem is that you don't fit into the neat little box Navy officers are supposed to fill. You're not human. Worse, you're not from the core worlds.
Neither are you, or many others.
But the rest of us wild space yokels aren't flying rings around all the politically connected elite who think they're such flaming hot stuff, Eli pointed out. You're showing them up, and they resent you for it. And if they can't take you down, they'll go after the people they think help make you who you are.
People like you.
Eli let his gaze drift away.
Yes. People like him.
People who still had the lowly rank they'd graduated the academy with while everyone else was energetically climbing the ladder. But this conversation wasn't about him. This conversation and warning were about Thrawn. They'd probably come after me if they thought I was worth the effort, he said, sidestepping the question.
Do you suggest I try to be less capable?
Of course not. Eli said firmly. You do that and more people will die and more bad guys get away. I'm just pointing out that you need to be aware that you're in the political crosshairs.
I understand, Thrawn said. I will endeavor to learn the rules and tactics of this form of warfare. In the meantime, is there anything we can do for Commander Chino?
Just wish him well, I guess, Eli said.
Even if you could persuade someone to listen to an appeal, he'd never command a ship again. This way, at least he got to go out on a high note.
Except that we know it was only a partial victory.
We suspect, Eli corrected, lowering his voice.
We don't know that's what Night Swan was going for.
He pointed to the door ahead. The door with the simple gold Imperial Security Bureau plaque above the smaller Colonel Wolf Yularen nameplate.
Maybe this is where we'll get those answers.
Colonel Yularen was waiting behind his desk when they arrived.
Welcome, Captain Thrawn, Ensign Vanto, he greeted them. Sit down.
Thank you, Colonel, Thrawn said. I trust you have news for us.
Yes, but not the news you want,
Yularen said sourly.
Speaking of news, I just heard that your Commander Chino got stabbed in the back by the court-martial panel. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Colonel, Thrawn said. He was a good officer.
So I've heard,
Yularen said.
Not great, but he didn't deserve to get bounced out that way.
His eyes narrowed.
Any blowback toward you? Either of you?
He added, looking at Eli.
Not that we've heard, sir, Eli said.
Good,
Yularen said.
They may not especially like you at High Command, Thrawn, but they can't ignore the fact that you get results.
He scowled.
Unfortunately, our results aren't quite up to your standards. We've done a complete search of every document ISB can get its hands on. The name Night Swan has cropped up on everything from metal smuggling to antiques purchases to the organization of protests and unrest. But we still don't have the slightest idea who he really is.
Interesting, Thrawn said.
You said he organized protests. Protests against whom?
Pretty much everyone,
Yularen said.
Mostly government, local and imperial both, but also corporations, manufacturing interests, even shipping companies.
His eyes flicked back and forth as he read from his computer display.
We haven't found anything in common among his various targets either. Maybe he just likes making trouble.
May I have a list of all activities he's associated with?
Thrawn asked.
Of course.
Yularen picked up a data card and handed it across the desk.
What are you hoping to find?
A pattern, Thrawn said. You say his targets appear random, but I believe we will find something connecting the locations, timing, or personnel involved. Many of his schemes involve the theft of dunium or other precious metals. Is there a chance he is driven by what he considers theft, or...
He looked at Eli.
Gubadalu?
Eli frowned.
Gubadalu? What in the world was that one?
Quickly he ran the Cybisti route and modifiers.
Ah, usurpation, he said.
Thank you,
Thrawn said.
Could he be driven by the theft or usurpation of some personal or family mining interests?
Interesting thought,
Yularen said.
Your typical smugglers, pirates, and thieves don't like to draw attention to themselves. But Night Swan slaps his name all over the place.
He pursed his lips.
Could be he's planning some major operation, and wants to get everyone looking somewhere else. I remember a group of arms smugglers during the Clone Wars who liked to set fires on one side of a city to draw the police and firefighters there, then hit a weapons depot on the other side.
Indeed,
Thrawn said.
What about Coruscant? Is there unrest here?
You must be joking,
Yularen said with a snort.
Go down 2,000 levels, and you'll find all the unrest you could ever want. Go down 4,000, and you might as well be in wild space.
So this would be a fertile ground for anti-imperial protests?
It would,
Yularen agreed.
Except that all the centers of power are up here, and we've got the best police, military, and private defense forces anywhere in the galaxy. Hell, we've got combat dojos that do nothing but train Senate and Ministry bodyguards. Night Swan could agitate from here until Ascension Week without making a single dent in anything that matters.
One would think Nubia equally immune to such threats.
Thrawn indicated an entry on his datapad.
Yet this protest at the Circle Bay Mayor's office seems to have been quite effective.
That was a unique case,
Yularen growled.
The perpetrators managed to get the entire kitchen staff fired, then infiltrated the new staff with their own people. Once you've got someone on the inside, you can pull off almost anything.
Exactly, Thrawn said. You said there were dojos that specifically work with Senate bodyguards?
Yes,
Yularen murmured, frowning with sudden interest.
Yes, I see where you're going. But most of the bodyguards who train at those places are already employed. I doubt a senator would go to one of the dojos to hire replacements or extra staff. He or she would probably get those from an accredited agency.
Yularen stood up.
Still, it's been a long time since ISB looked at any of those places. Might be worth taking a tour of the Federal District's combat subculture. Either of you care to join us?
Welcome to the Yin Charm Dojo.
The boy seated cross-legged on the floor to the right of the door rises to his feet. His voice has the clearness of youth, with cheerfulness beneath the solemnity. He bows at the waist toward Colonel Yularen, then repeats the gesture to each of the other four of the group.
Abandon the tedium and cares of life, all who enter, and prepare your minds and bodies for the rigors and joys of combat.
We will,
Yularen said.
His voice is calm and official, but there is a hint of humor beneath it, as well as appreciation for the boy's performance.
I'm Colonel Yularen. I wish to speak to the owner of this place. Can you go and bring her to us?
I can,
the boy acknowledged.
He bows again to Yularen.
Please, come inside.
The group filed into the dojo. The boy waited until all five were standing against the wall, then headed off around the edge of the training room.
Not nearly as impressive as the last one, sir,
Vanto murmured.
No,
Thrawn agreed.
A little small and a little too far from sunlight to be considered top line,
Yularen agreed.
He looked slowly across the training area, his eyes flicking back and forth, taking in the details. A sparring duo works in each of the central mat's corners. One duo empty hand, the second empty hand against blade, the third and fourth stick against stick. A young human female circles the center of the mat, calling occasional instructions and corrections to each of the pairs.
On the other hand, 30 senators have sent one or more of their bodyguards here for updated training or sparring over the past 5 years,
Yularen continued.
So the place must have something going for it. Owner's a Tagorian, named Hasishi.
The boy, continuing around the room, passes a woman seated on a bench against the wall.
Sir? Vanto said suddenly.
He nods toward the woman.
That woman. We've seen her someplace before.
The boy passes the woman, and she stands and makes her way around the edge of the mat. An overly wide round kick comes near. She leans gracefully out of its path. An indication of moderate proficiency in skill. She reaches the Imperials and inclines her head.
Welcome to the Incharm Dojo, Captain Thrawn, she said, raising her voice to be heard over the clash of combat sticks. I'm Arinda Price. You probably won't remember, but we met once at an Ascension Week reception in the Alessandra Hotel, back when you were a senior lieutenant.
Certainly I remember you, Miss Price, Thrawn said. You are an aide to Senator Domus Rankin.
You have a remarkable memory, Captain, Price said. I'm no longer with Senator Rankin's office, though. I work now for an advocacy group.
I see, Thrawn said. May I reintroduce my companions, Colonel Ularin and Ensign Vanto?
I remember you both, Price said.
She nods a greeting to each of them. Her eyes shift briefly to the two ISB agents standing silent watch behind them.
How may I assist you?
We wish to speak to the owner, Ularin said. The boy's gone to get her.
Who is the woman overseeing the sparring? Thrawn asked.
That's Juahir Madras, one of the instructors, Price said.
Are you here for a class? Ularin asked.
No, Price said. My boss thought I might be able to establish a few contacts with some of the high-level bodyguards who train here, so I've been hanging around for the past few days, chatting with people. Ah, here's Hasishi now.
A large feline being appears in one of the doorways leading from the side of the main room. She is covered in short brown white fur and dressed in a combination kilt and bandolier. Her yellow eyes focus on each of the visitors in turn. She looks at each of the sparring duos, then at Instructor Madras.
Cease! She called.
Instantly, the sparring halted. In the silence, Hisishi strode across the mat, moving with grace on her back-jointed legs. She passed Instructor Madras without a glance and came to a halt beside Price.
Good day to you, officers of the Empire, she said.
Her voice is sibilant but clear.
I am Hisishi, master of the Incharm Dojo. How may I serve you?
The sparring duo stand facing the visitors, their facial heat intense from heavy exercise. Instructor Madras's expression and stance show uneasiness. Her gaze is on Ularin's chest, not his face.
I am Colonel Ularin,
Ularin said.
This is Captain Thrawn, Ensign Vanto, Officers Roenton and Brooke. We're doing a routine spot check of the dojos in the Federal District, with particular interest in government contracts and bodyguard training. I presume you have full records of both?
Of course,
Hisishi said.
I will get them for you.
Before you do, Thrawn said, we are also interested in trainers for a possible new urban combat unit. Do you teach advanced stick fighting?
We do,
Hisishi confirmed.
Have you had training in that art?
I've had the basics,
Thrawn said.
I would like to observe your best technique firsthand.
Certainly, Hasishi said. Instructor Madras and I will offer you a demonstration.
There is no need to involve any others, Thrawn said. Instructor Madras, please bring the sticks. Instructor Hisishi and I will spar.
Sir? Vanto asked.
His voice is surprised and wary, but there is no understanding in it. He doesn't see the patterns, nor has he woven together the facts and possibilities. Madras walks to the center of the mat, the fighting sticks in her hands. Her body stance holds uneasiness.
Miss Price, please walk alongside me, Thrawn said. There is a question I wish to ask.
Of course.
Price moved to his side. Thrawn, Price, and Hisishi walked to the center of the mat.
You said you worked for an advocacy group, Thrawn said.
Which one? It's called the Higher Skies Group,
Price said.
Thank you, Thrawn said.
Stand clear now. Instructor Hisishi, let us begin.
Price and Madras stepped away.
The timer is for 3 minutes,
Hisishi said. She crossed her sticks in salute. Thrawn mirrored the gesture. They began.
Hisishi is a good fighter, but her focus is solely on the combat, with no thought for other matters. She does not notice as the relative positions are slowly altered until Price and Madras are within view. Both watch the combat, neither speaking to the other, though a quick conversation could have occurred before they were fully in view. Their expressions are inconclusive. Both women are fascinated by the combat, with all fears, concerns, and thoughts submerged. With Hisishi herself, there are no longer doubts. The 3 minutes end. Hisishi steps back and again crosses his sticks.
Excellent, Captain, she said. Your style is unknown to me, but you have clearly been well trained.
Thank you, Instructor, Thrawn said.
He crossed his own sticks and then offered them to Madras.
She walks forward and takes them, her eyes avoiding his gaze. Perhaps the next time I have duty on Coruscant, you will teach me some of your style.
It is of your species?
Yes, a Tagorian form, she said. I hope you will find the time. I would welcome you as both student and teacher. And now, Colonel Yularen, I will retrieve the records you requested.
They waited while she went to her office and returned with a data card. Yularen accepted it, then led the group back outside.
Well, that was interesting,
Yularen commented as they walked toward their air car.
I assume, Captain, that you didn't simply feel the need for a little exercise.
Indeed, Thrawn said. I presume you noted that Instructor Madras did not stop the sparring when we first entered.
She didn't stop when Price came over to talk, either,
Yularen said.
His tone conveys thoughtfulness.
And that despite the fact that the noise made conversation difficult.
They didn't stop until Hisishi ordered them to,
Vanto added.
I assume you think it wasn't just rudeness?
Yularen asked.
I think she knows who I am, Thrawn said. She certainly knows who you are, Colonel. And so she stalled our meeting, wishing additional time to prepare herself.
Interesting,
Yularen said.
Unfortunately, it's a reaction ISB agents see all the time. Everyone has dirty secrets.
But not everyone has secrets concerning Higher Skies, Thrawn said.
The advocacy group?
Yularen asked.
Yes, Thrawn said. It is the one with which Ms. Price works. I asked about it before the sparring, and watched Instructor Madras as Ms. Price supplied me with the name. She reacted with discomfort.
You're sure?
Yes, Thrawn said. For one reason or another, the group bears investigation.
So once you had the name and Madras's reaction, why did you go ahead with the fight?
Vanto asked.
I have developed a certain skill for reading human emotions, Thrawn said. I do not have such a baseline for Tagorians. I wish to know if Hisishi, too, was concerned that I know of Ms. Price's connection with Higher Skies. So you gave her the chance to take you out,
Vanto said slowly.
His tone holds growing understanding.
You were the only one of us who'd heard the name. So if she wanted to, she could knock you down, claim it was an accident,
and buy herself and the group some time. Correct,
Thrawn said.
To be more precise, I offered what looked like opportunities to injure me. They were, of course, illusory.
Of course,
Bento said.
His tone is properly respectful, but also holds irony.
So, when you were attacked at Royal Imperial Academy?
I wished to study the attacker's capabilities, Thrawn said. I would have protected you from serious harm, as indeed I protected myself.
You'll have to tell me all about that one sometime, Captain.
Yularen pulls out his comlink.
I'll get ISB started on higher skies and see what we can dig up.
I would caution that the investigation be careful and low-key, Thrawn said. They will be alert now to such a probe, and we do not wish to drive them away.
Yes, we do know how to handle investigations, thank you.
I meant no offense, Thrawn said. I would also consider it a favor if you would allow me to observe your progress.
Sorry, but that won't be possible,
Yularen said.
New orders came in while you were batting sticks with Hisishi. Ensign Vanto picked them up.
He gestures to Vanto.
Ensign?
Yes, sir,
Vanto said.
His voice holds hidden frustration.
For the next 4 weeks, while the Thunder Wasp undergoes repairs, you'll be at the palace with Emperor Palpatine. Once the repairs are complete, it'll return to mid-rim and outer-rim patrol duties.
He pauses, his frustration growing deeper.
Under the authority of its newly appointed captain, Commander Thrawn.
Congratulations, Commander,
Yularen murmured.
Thank you, Thrawn said.
He had been promoted, yet Vanto had not. That wasn't as it should be. Vanto had held the rank of ensign a full year longer than was customary. Yet there was nothing Vanto had done or failed to do that should have delayed his promotion.
Impressive achievement,
Yularen continued.
His gaze switches between Thrawn and Vanto. He too recognizes something is amiss.
Usually a captain warms that position for at least 6 years.
I understand that during the Clone War, promotions occurred more quickly.
Wartime will do that,
Yularen said.
His voice holds grim memories.
Good luck with your new assignment, and your new command. And don't worry about higher skies. Whatever's there, we'll find it.
Chapter 16.
No one is immune from failure. All have tasted the bitterness of defeat and disappointment. A warrior must not dwell on that failure, but must learn from it and continue on. But not all learn from their errors. That is something those who seek to dominate others know very well, and know how to exploit. If an opponent has failed once at a logic problem, his enemy will first try the same type of problem, hoping the failure will be repeated. What the manipulator sometimes forgets, and what a warrior must always remember, is that no two sets of circumstances are alike. One challenge is not like another. The would-be victim may have learned from the earlier mistake, or there may have been an unanticipated or unknown crossing of life paths.
Sorry I missed our last two sessions.
Otlas's voice came from Arinda's comm.
As I told you, my employer has come for a visit, and we've all been pretty busy.
I understand,
Arinda said. She did, too, which wasn't to say she was happy with the situation. Not just because of the interruption in her combat training, but because she really enjoyed Otlas's company. But work was work, and even in the upper echelons of Imperial power, only a few had the luxury of picking and choosing their own schedules.
If you ever do get a couple of hours you don't know what to do with, though, let me know, she said.
Naturally, that's why I'm calling. I'm watching the office alone tonight. Everyone else is off to a party. And if we move the table in the conference room over to the wall, there should be plenty of room for a sparring session. You game?
I think so,
Arinda said, frowning. This was out of the blue.
Still, it would be a chance to get in some practice. Not to mention a couple of hours of human contact that wasn't just pitching high-minded policies to senators and ministers. When do you want me? And where do you want me? You've never given me the address.
I haven't? Oh, sorry.
He rattled off the address. A place in one of the office spires near the Senate building.
As the time, the sooner the better. Like I said, everyone's already gone, and we'll have the place to ourselves.
Aside from door watch droids?
Well, of course, aside from them. But I'm high enough clearance that I can vouch to them for you. How soon can you be here?
Arinda checked the chrono. Technically, she was supposed to keep the office open for another 40 minutes, just in case some senator's aide dropped by for more information on one of Higher Sky's policy positions. But as usual, she was alone here this afternoon. Just this once, she decided, the Empire's movers and shakers could wait until tomorrow.
10 minutes, she said.
10 it is,
Atlas said.
Just buzz the door when you get here, and I'll let you in.
Arinda backtracked the address on her datapad during the air taxi ride, hoping to find out who exactly Atlas worked for. But that information was unlisted. Once inside the building, Atlas had already cleared her with the outer door droids, she looked for a directory or some other index or occupant listing. Again, nothing. Apparently the residents didn't want even droid-approved visitors to know who was here and where exactly they were located. She'd already guessed Atlas's employer was very high up in the official ranks. This merely confirmed it. The two door-watch droids in the hallway stared silently at Arinda as she approached the office door. But they permitted her to touch the buzzer without challenge. Atlas answered promptly, gave the droids his personal clearance password, and ushered her inside.
Nice,
she commented, looking around as he led the way through the foyer and down a long corridor. The carpeting, wall hangings, and pillar sculpts were elegant but more understated than the decor she'd seen in other senators' offices. Someone who liked luxury but didn't feel a need to rub people's faces in it.
Your boss must be even more important than I guessed.
Probably so, Atlas agreed. This way.
Arinda frowned, casually dropping a half step behind him. There was an odd layer of emotional distance in Atlas's speech and mannerisms tonight. Something wasn't right.
Where's the party?
She asked.
What party?
The party you said everyone else had gone to.
Oh.
He stopped by an open door and gestured her toward it.
In here, please.
Thank you,
she said. Something was definitely wrong, but it was too late to back out now. Brushing past him, she stepped into the room and came to an abrupt halt. This wasn't the conference room Atlas had promised. It was an office, as luxuriously appointed as the foyer and corridor, with trinkets and trophies from around the galaxy on display, and no room whatsoever for sparring. And seated behind the carved pearl desk,
"Good evening, Miss Price,"
Moff Gotti said, rising to his feet.
"It's nice to see you again."
For a long moment, Arinda stood where she was, the memory of her last run-in with Gotti flooding over her. This was the man who'd thrown spice on her and then threatened to have her arrested. The man who'd used that blackmail lever to make her betray Senator Rankin. The man who'd sent her entire life into a tailspin.
Your Excellency, she said,
stepping away from the door and walking toward him.
Nice to see you as well. You really should have taken me into your confidence back in the Alessandra Hotel.
Gotti's confident smile slipped a bit.
No?
Absolutely, Arinda assured him. If you had, I could have told you that I was just as eager to take down Senator Ranking as you were.
Really?
Gotti said, eyeing her closely.
Your own boss?
The man who engineered the Imperial takeover of my family's mining business on Lothal,
she corrected.
I just would have preferred to destroy him without messing up my own life in the process.
She stopped beside the guest chair in front of his desk.
May I?
By all means,
Gotti said, waving her to the chair. His smile, she noted, was back to full confidence.
I would argue from results that the upheaval in your life was the best thing that could have happened to you. Your poise and confidence alone show you've come a long way.
And I probably would have come still further if I hadn't had to start over at the bottom,
Arinda said. She glanced around as she sat down, noting that Atlas had taken up position in the center of the doorway behind her, as if expecting to thwart an escape attempt. The fact that she hadn't even tried to run seemed to have confused him.
But that's water under the bridge,
she added, turning back to Gotti.
So, to what do I owe the pleasure of this invitation?
First poise, now directness,
Gotti said approvingly.
Excellent. Let's see if we can add honesty to the list. Who do you work for?
I'm sure you already know. The Higher Skies Advocacy Group.
Good,
Gotti said.
Let's continue. Who hired your advocacy group to destroy me?
Arinda frowned.
Excuse me?
No, no. The useless, naive child approach won't work anymore,
Gotti said.
Not for you.
I'm not naive. And I'm not a child,
Arinda said as calmly as she could.
I'm just confused, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really?
Gotti growled.
You have no idea that very soon after one of your people came to talk to me, some of my confidential financial information was recovered from a smuggler gang? Or that one of my mines was hit by raiders barely a week later?
What was stolen?
Arinda asked. Gotti frowned.
What?
I asked what was stolen,
Arinda repeated.
Maybe whoever took your data is only interested in your mines or other resources.
Gotti gave a snort.
Don't insult my intelligence,
he bit out.
No one robs a moth, nor if they want to continue breathing. These are either the preliminary pinpricks leading to an attack, or else a diversion. Either way, I want to know who's behind it.
His eyes narrowed.
Is it Ranking?
Your Excellency.
He's the obvious one,
Gotti went on.
But subtlety has never been his strong point. A different senator. They're forever jockeying for position and advantage. Or maybe a moth.
He barked a cynical laugh.
Ha! Of course. It's Tarkin, isn't it? Grand Moff Tarkin, for whom nothing is ever quite enough. He's wanted me gone for years. Tell me it's him.
Arinda shook her head.
I'm sorry, Your Excellency, but I can't help you.
Gotti leaned back in his chair, his gaze steady on her face.
Fine. You don't know? Maybe your boss does. Let's call and tell him you've been invited to my office, just as Atlas set it up. Let's see if he makes any interesting suggestions as to what you should do once you're here.
Arinda thought about it. Driller seemed way too cheerful and open to be a spy.
But there was the sketchiness about who else was working for